Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
We are not good.
What?
We are not good, Chef.
No?
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
The Athletic presents Hogan Johns.
We're in another corner!
Why the do I watch this team?
One of the local writers, Adam Hoagie, or Hog, excuse me, I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
From CHGO, it's Adam Hoag.
Hey, George.
Hi, Adam.
And from The Athletic, it's Adam Johns.
Adam Johns, go ahead.
Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Coach Ditka versus the Hurricane, who would win?
Ditka.
Hold on. The name of the Hurricane is Hurricane Ditka.
Here they are, Hogan Johns.
What's up? Welcome in. Hoag and Johns back with you with a special episode. The Beast, Dane Brugler, on with us today.
I thought it was just a special episode because it's your birthday.
It is my birthday.
We're just going to talk about you.
No. I mean, I always like to say that, you know, I share a birthday with Bill Belichick. You may have heard of him. And it's just a known fact that great football minds were born on April 16th.
I share a birthday with Justin Fields.
Nah.
Come on now.
This is totally off topic. Didn't think we were going there. The Brewers catcher looks just like Justin Fields.
All right.
It was freaking me out yesterday.
Brewers catcher.
Justin. Contreras. I don't know if you're just going to look up his mugshot if it's going to and it still translates in the
oh yeah, I see the
yeah, William Contreras, their catcher. I was watching the game last night in the mascot, and by the way, he was having a terrible inning. He had a pass ball. He had a catcher's interference. And I'm like, Justin Fields playing catcher for the Brewers right now. And my wife goes, he should probably go back to playing quarterback because it was going that poorly for Willie Contreras. But anyway, that was off topic. But happy birthday to you and Justin Fields too.
Oh, in sincerity, happy birthday to you, my friend.
Thank you.
I forgot how to do the balloons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
we take the confetti.
There you go. If you're watching on YouTube.
Now it feels like my birthday.
Good.
Yeah. It's great. Hey, I just got celebrate my birthday this way. I just got an important text from our guys at Obvious Shirts. And the story behind this is we had a listener a few weeks ago suggest with the polos that actually we're both wearing today. We did not plan that, by the way, but both the Walking Bear polos are on us today. But someone suggested that we have quarter zips. I'm getting distracted because I'm literally getting these texts right now as I'm trying to promote this. So this is good. This is good. But Joe and Devin from Obvious Shirt said, yeah, quarter zips. We can do that. Of course we can. And they're texting me the images literally this second as they are live on HoganJohns.com. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to turn these around and get them on the screen as that fast. But I promise you, if you go to HoganJohns.com, you can see these. They look outstanding with a couple different logos as well. HoganJohns.com. Quarter zips are live. And we're in this murky, like, yeah, you could wear a polo, but it's also spring and it might still be a little chilly out there. So you go quarter zip. It's great.
I love a quarter zip. Oh, they look sharp.
Yeah.
I'm looking at them right now.
There's a white version, just like the polos, essentially. There's the white version and there's the blue version. So those are live for you on HoganJohns.com. And, of course, the polos are there for you as well. We got Dane Brugler on the show today, so we probably shouldn't waste too much time here off the top. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, at Adam Hoag, at Adam Johns, at Hogan Johns, where we're taking some listener questions today for Dane as well. So make sure you're following us at Hogan Johns on Twitter. And, again, all of our merch is at HoganJohns.com. Let's jump right in. I've been waiting to talk to Dane. The Beast came out last Wednesday. I got a lot of questions, a lot of interesting things that came in, as always, with the Beast. Some nuggets, some tidbits, some serious, some not so serious. It's always a lot of fun to dive into this. And let's bring him in right now, Dane Brugler. All right, let's bring him in. Dane Brugler, fresh off the Beast, out. Print it out for me, ready to go. We're on the top 100 page right now. Dane, appreciate
so
all the work.
You made it all the way through then.
Yeah, exactly.
He cheated.
That's the last page. So
it's funny that like the page I end up coming back to, I feel like the most, especially when it first comes out, is the top 100, and it's right. I mean, it's conveniently in the back, but yeah, it's the last page.
Yeah, there's a lot to get through between Caleb in that top 100. So that's a lot of reading.
Dane, let's start with Caleb. We have to, by rule, on this show now, until he's officially selected, then it's just going to become a Caleb Williams show. But like, when you're collecting nuggets and information on these guys, like, do some of them just make you smile? Like, take me back to the Bobby Boucher reference that you gathered, and you just got to be like, oh, this is great. This is definitely getting in the Beast.
Right, and most of that stuff's from scouts, where it's just like, let's have a Caleb conversation. You know, like, what's some interesting things that you've heard? And some of it doesn't make the final product because it's too weird or too like insignificant or, you know, maybe too personal. But stuff like that is so much fun. Like, you know, not playing quarterback till fourth or fifth grade and being that linebacker, running back growing up. And it's when you watch him on film, when you see him run the football, you can see it. You can see that he was a running back in his past, or the way he finishes some of these runs. Okay, I can see where he was a linebacker with the nickname like Bobby Boucher. Like, I get it. So it's fun when you have a picture in your mind of the player, but then you go back and do some of the homework and you piece together his upbringing, his football journey to get to this point, and some of the pieces fall into place where you can certainly see where he ended up. And with Caleb, that's obviously a big part of, you know, his journey was coming, you know, him and his dad coming up with this plan at 10 years old to, you know, get the wheels set in motion to hopefully get to this point. And so far, you know, there's been bumps along the way. Things haven't gone 100% according to plan, but for them to have this plan and for them to be on the doorstep of being the number one overall pick, things have gone pretty close to what they wanted to do. And so it's really interesting to figure all that stuff out.
Dane, we got a lot of non-Caleb questions but I do want to hit on just kind of your journey in scouting him here and getting to this point, because I feel like you know, because I've been listening to your guys' pod, Prospects to the Pros. It's one of the best ways to keep up with sort of the draft season during the actual NFL season in the fall. And like, I feel like you sort of went through a similar process that maybe a lot of these NFL teams did, and maybe even the Chicago Bears, where, you know, back in October, November, maybe there was a little bit of doubt creeping in, just, you know, after especially the Notre Dame game, for instance. And Nate Tice, obviously, very famously has Drake May as his number one guy, and you kind of seem to have him a little bit closer. And then, okay, you get out of the season, you sort of get to the finish line with all this, and it seems like Caleb Williams has settled back in there as, you know, your very clear-cut number one guy.
Yeah, that's the fun part of doing the podcast and writing about the draft in season, because you're being very transparent about the process. You know, once we get to January and February, the rankings are pretty much set. You know, if you're making these big wholesale changes at the top, I'm not sure what you're doing it based off of, because all the tape's been in, all the work's been done. But during the season, certainly, you can't help but be swayed by what happens on the film. And you try not to be, you know, get too far in either direction, because it should be about the body of work more so than just what a player did in one game. But when you're talking about the number one overall pick and you're splitting hairs between some of these top quarterbacks, you know, there was a point in, I think it was like right around Halloween, where I thought, okay, you know what, Drake May, the way he's been playing, the way Caleb's been playing, I think I lean Drake May as a top quarterback in this draft. And then honestly, the way November played out, It was like, okay, you know what? I think my first instinct was right. Caleb is the best quarterback in this draft. Drake, I'm still very, very bullish on. Hey, this guy is going to be a good pro. A lot of what he has translates to the next level. But when you focus on Caleb, the rare football awareness that he plays with, the body balance. So no matter what awkward position he's in, he's able to make it work. And you see guys like Matthew Stafford have that. Patrick Mahomes has that. Caleb has that, where it's just a body balance. It's the arm velocity. It's natural accuracy. A lot goes into it that it just looks normal for him. It looks very natural. So I think that even though it was a 7-5 record, the season did not go as planned for USC. But I don't think that Caleb was the reason for that. Did he have some low moments? Sure. The Notre Dame game certainly stands out. But when you have a USC defense that gave up at least 34 points in all of their losses that they've had the last 2 years, it's like, okay, you know what? The offense can only do so much when the defense is giving up 43 points per game. So it's one of those things where we don't want to just look at the win-loss record and put that on the quarterback. Let's look at the traits. Let's look at what he was asked to do. And sometimes he fell short, especially that Washington game. That was when he infamously went into the stands and he's crying with his mom. And, you know, did things go according to plan? No, but this is still the best quarterback in the draft, in my opinion.
Let's stay with quarterback, because everything you just said, like on the flip side of that, is J.J. McCarthy. And I think you were like one of the first ones to put out there that he could be an early first round pick. Like, you felt confident about it then. I'm sure even more so now. Like, but now are you thinking like top 10, potentially top 5? Like, how crazy would that be? Would be that to you? And I guess, like, at least from the Bears perspective, like, you're looking at that number 9 pick and maybe a team coming in there for him. Just what do you make of the J.J. McCarthy conversation, maybe since your tweet about him?
Well, it's funny because I felt very alone on the J.J. McCarthy train in the summer. I mean, going back to my top 50 in August, he was in the top 25. I believe this is a first-round player. This is a guy that has a chance to be a really good NFL starter. And then at some point, November, December, probably around when the college football playoffs were going on, it felt like, you know, my opinion kind of stayed the same. I see him as a late one, early two, a guy that, you know, in the mid first round, when you include a quarterback tax, you know, you think about drafting him. But then it seems like a lot of people passed me in terms of what their opinion was on J.J. McCarthy. And that's fine. You know, I get it. I obviously, if I believe he's a first round caliber player, I think he's an NFL starter. I think he is a guy with a bright future. And a big part of why I believe that from the start was, once he gets in front of coaches, the intangible factor is going to take over and they're going to fall in love with this kid. Not only does he have the tools, he has the skill set, but he has the intangibles. That's what teams are looking for. It's an intangible position. And do you wish the body of work were greater? Sure, absolutely. They won a national championship with their ground game and dominating in the trenches. And, you know, who are we to argue that they won a national title doing it that way? So I don't think it was anything like a lack of trust in the quarterback. It was just how they built that offense. So with J.J. McCarthy, it feels like there's more of a leap of faith that's needed with him because of that projection. But again, he has the tools. And I know team or fans roll their eyes at the win-loss record stuff with quarterbacks, but 36-2 with a state championship in high school, 27-1 with a national championship at Michigan, and that stuff matters to NFL teams. So it is relevant to the conversation, and I think it'll be really interesting to see if he can crash that top three mix. You know, I think obviously Caleb's going to be that first pick, but then the Commanders at 2, the Patriots at 3, and then likely we see a team trading up into the top 6 to get that that fourth quarterback. But what's the order of the quarterbacks going to be? It could be, you know, I think right now with what we hear from the buzz, it's Jaden Daniels 2, Drake May 3, and then someone trading up for J.J. McCarthy. But as we know, things get, you know, everyone looks at these quarterbacks a little bit differently. And I don't think it'd be a shock if J.J. McCarthy is number 2 or number 3 for some of these teams, which would really make things interesting in the top 6.
All right. Whenever I get the beast in front of me, when it first comes out, obviously, I like to look at, all right, what are the Dane surprises here? Like, who does he have higher than I thought? Who does he have lower than I thought? What, you know, compared to what I've been looking at for the last couple months or whatever. One of the ones that stood out to me right away is somebody that you like that I also like, but with a giant catch is Troy Fatanu from Washington, who, I mean, basically looked like a tight end working out at the combine. Moves great. Was part of Washington's outstanding season playing left tackle there. You got him at number 9 overall in your top 100, which surprised me a little bit that you had him that high, except you got him as guard 1, not tackle. So explain why you think he's better suited inside at guard, and I'm kind of curious maybe where you would have ranked him among the tackles had you kept him there.
Probably the same spot. I think he's the second best offensive lineman in the draft, and that versatility is a big reason why. He can legitimately play multiple positions. Some would even argue he has 5 position versatility. And to your point about the combine, seeing him work out in person, that was kind of the final, like, okay, yes, I love the tape. I love the traits. Seeing him move like that, I was like, all right, yep, second best offensive lineman for me, no doubt. And Midre, you know, aesthetically, he just looks like a guard. I think he has the length and the feet to stay outside at tackle, and I won't be surprised at all if he's drafted as a tackle. But this is it's a Peter Skoronski, Zach Martin type of projection where he could stay at tackle and he'd be fine. I just think his skill set would be maximized. You move him inside to guard, and I think that you really have something. But again, versatility is the key with Fatanu because he could play center if you wanted him to. He could play on the right side if you wanted him to. I'm not going to overthink Fatanu and get too worried about, okay, he's going to have to be here, and that means we have to move here. He's going to allow me to get my best 5 on out there on my offensive line. So somewhere in the first, say, 16 picks is where I think he's going to go. And he has one of the more universal approval ratings from team to team. Talking to a team yesterday, they're picking in the 20s, and he made it known. He's like, listen, if Faiutano somehow falls to us, lock it in. He's our pick. Easy. We just don't think he's going to get there. And a lot of teams really like the player because, again, that versatility, and he's very clean. Unless there's something medical that pops up that we don't know about, he's a very clean player, and that's why, at the end of the day, he ended up at number 9 overall for me in my top 100.
With him included, I guess, like, how good is this offensive tackle class? Because I've heard nothing but, like, amazing things. And I know it doesn't stand out as, like, this immediate need for the Bears, but Adam and I have talked about this. With Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham, like, you can almost feel the investment coming on the offensive line. So, like, how deep is it? And then, like, as a sidebar question, a lot of these guys have experience on the right side. Like, who do you think could flip sides the easiest?
Yeah, and I think that the tackles going early, it's kind of twofold because, yeah, the talent warrants it, but I also think we have a drop-off. And so if you don't get your tackle in the first round, there are a few tackles that are serviceable and you think can become NFL starters on day 2, but you're not nearly as confident about the guys that are going to go in round 1. So that's another reason why we're going to see these guys go early. And overall, this is an offensive draft, period. My 7-rounder comes out tomorrow on The Athletic, and I have 21 offensive players in the first round. That's never happened before. We've never reached 20 in a draft before, but there's a good chance that happens this year, and it's a combination of the offensive talent and then the okay defensive talent. We've got some studs on the defensive side, but not a lot of them. So I think we're going to see an offensive-heavy first round led by those tackles, and it just, you know, I think the record's 7. Could we match that, exceed it? Sure, and it might depend on what you think of Faiutanu or what you think of Jordan Morgan. Is he a tackle or a guard and all that? But each one of these tackles offers something a little bit differently. I think Joe Alt from Notre Dame is the most well-rounded, has the more sure ceiling. There's no such thing as a sure pick, but he seems like he has the easiest projection to being a really good player. Olufashinu, to your point, not having, or a lot of these guys are right tackles. Olu, a left tackle. We know he can do it and hold up on the blind side. Then there's those right tackles with J.C. Latham, Talese Fuaga, Amarius Mims, Tyler Guyton. all four of those guys were right tackle only at the college level. And so it's a projection saying, yeah, we'll just move them over to the left side. Not that quite that easy, but that's why we have offensive linemen, offensive line coaches going to all these pro days, why a lot of these guys are coming to the facility for 30 visits to work them out, to figure them out as people, but also, okay, put them down in a left tackle stance, see how they move. Is it awkward for them? How comfortable are they moving on the left side? So a lot of these questions are being answered during the process by offensive line coaches. And it'll be interesting to see which tackles teams try to move and which ones are just like, you know what, he's a right tackle. We're okay with that. It fits what we need. So we're going to see a lot of these guys fly off the board, and it'll be interesting to see the order that they come off. And I think left tackle, right tackle could play a part in how certain directions that teams end up drafting these guys.
Help us out with this edge rusher class. We had Josh Lucas on the show. I don't know. I'm losing track of time now. 2 weeks ago, last week, whatever. And he had some pretty interesting just research of, you know, you go through some of these draft classes in the past and you just look at the history of drafting edge rushers and how often that actually pays off, not only in terms of a hit rate, but also correlating to success for the teams that draft those players. But I'm kind of struggling with these guys, and you have Dallas Turner as your number one edge, but not until 14. Jared Verse, we've talked about, this seems like a better scheme fit for what the Bears run, but you got him down at number 20. Explain, I guess, those couple players, and if there's anyone else you feel like would be a good fit for the Bears with what draft capital they actually have, which is limited after their top two picks in the top nine.
Right, and that does make it tough, right? Because they pick 9 and then they pick, 75? So we're talking about a pretty big gap here. And if they stay at 9, you know, they're going to have some options, whether it be a wide receiver, whether it be pass rusher. But if they trade back, then, okay, things start to open up a little bit. And does that mean that a Chop Robinson from Penn State becomes more of an option, or a Marshawn Nealon from Western Michigan? He's one of my favorite players in this draft. If I had to pick a surprise first-round pick this year, I'd probably go with Marshawn Nealon out of Western Michigan. But, I think at the top with Dallas Turner, he's an easy player to like because, he has a lot of the ingredients that you're looking for in a pass rusher. He's 6'3", 247 pounds, and he can play the run. He's a freaky athlete. You could stand him up and let him play middle linebacker, and he'd be fine. I mean, he can cover tight ends and backs and has range, but he also can get after the quarterback. And, he is a guy that has the traits, but he also has production. He led the SEC in sacks last year with 11 sacks. So he's not quite Will Anderson in terms of the savvy it takes to patch together a pass rush plan. And I mean, he'll throw out these different moves, but he's still learning how to, the nuances of playing the position. So I don't think you're going to expect him to come in and be a double-digit sack player early in his career, but he has that potential. He has all the ingredients to do it. Just needs more coaching, more experience, and I think he can get there. But there is projection involved with him. Jared Verse, I mean, another guy that's just, what's not to like about him? He's 6'4", 255. The power that he plays with, the energy. I don't know. One of the most energetic pass rushers I've ever evaluated. He doesn't stop talking. He doesn't stop moving. And he just, he wants to get to the quarterback on every single play. And, give me the guys that hate to be blocked, and I'll win with those guys. Jared Verse definitely qualifies. And I think pass rusher is kind of like tackle that I was just mentioning, how we're going to see these guys go in the first round, but then it feels like there's a drop-off. And, especially with this edge rusher group, after that first round, I mentioned Marshawn Nealon, who I think could sneak into that first-round range. He's somewhere in the top 40, 40-ish picks, but he plays the right position. That could vault him up a little bit. But on day two, we're talking about, okay, Adisa Isaac, the other Penn State pass rusher, Chris Braswell from Alabama, the other Alabama pass rusher, maybe an Austin Booker from Kansas. There's just not a ton of names, and we know the demand will be far more than the supply when it comes to those edge rushers on day two. So who knows, when the Bears finally get around to picking at 75, their options at the position might be wiped out. That's a long time to wait before you get to that 75th pick to understand who's going to be left for you. And in an edge rusher class like this, where the day two options are kind of average, that could be something that they're waiting on pins and needles, waiting to see who falls.
Okay, Dan, we have some questions from, well, Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, from some followers and listeners. So, Kent, what do we got? This is from Eric Brown 10. What is your favorite nugget that you unearthed researching this year's class of prospects?
Favorite nugget. The Ray Davis story is so awesome. The Kentucky running back, just learning more and more about him, I think was a lot of fun for me. Cause I think that's my favorite part of doing this is the journey and learning about these guys, Ray Davis, his upbringing, in and out of foster care, everything pointed against him having a successful career, successful life. And somehow he's overcome everything. He became the first player ever to lead three different FBS teams in rushing. He started at Temple, then he went to Vanderbilt, then he went to Kentucky, led each time, led the team in rushing the last 2 years in the SEC. So just the fact that he's overcome so much, and then he went on to lead three different teams in rushing, and he's an awesome guy talking to him. Every time I've talked to him, I feel like he's mentioned his offensive line. He's found a way to wedge it into the conversation because he has so much respect for those guys. So Ray Davis, an easy guy to root for. Somewhere third round, fourth round, a team's going to get a really good running back.
Next. All right, let's see. We got Lucas Berry next. He says, who are some of the players that aren't household names that could sneak in the round one? You kind of gave us one already there with Marshawn Nealon. Anyone else that stands out to you?
Every year we probably know, 27, 28 names that are going to be the first rounders, and it's those last five that are kind of tough to figure out. I don't look at every first round mock draft, so it's kind of tough to, I think most people know Ladd McConkey has a good chance of sneaking in there. Jordan Morgan from Arizona. I do think Marshawn Nealon, who is my number 32 overall player, I'm much higher on him than most people. I think he has a shot. Chris Jenkins, the defensive tackle from Michigan. This is a lackluster defensive tackle class, and so I think that's going to push up some guys. I think he has a chance. And, I would throw Junior Colson in there as well, sticking with the Michigan theme. This is not a great linebacker group. And it's one of those cases where if I really need a linebacker if I'm a team that needs a linebacker and I don't want to wait until a late second round to see if the top linebacker on my board falls to me, I might just pull the trigger and do it. You look at the Cowboys, the Packers, some of those teams picking in the late first round. It wouldn't totally shock me if Junior Colson from Michigan was able to sneak in there. If he doesn't go late first, I think he's going to go somewhere that early second. I don't think he gets past Harbaugh as a college head coach at 37 to the Chargers. So I think Junior Colson is one of those names that I've never seen him in a first round mock. But if it ended up happening, I wouldn't be completely shocked because he's a good player, but also because the linebacker depth is lacking and most teams have him as linebacker one. And instead of just taking your plan B, C, or D, let's just take our plan A and, we feel good about him in the later portion of the first round.
Kent, do we have one more quickly?
I think we do, yeah. Windy City Flyer, in what round does the depth of the prospect pool fall off the cliff?
Yeah, and I think you almost have to do it position by position because wide receiver is going to stretch. I think we feel good about receivers going into sixth round, seventh round. But we kind of mentioned it with some of these others. Tackles, I think, falls off on day two. Edge rusher falls off on day two. Defensive tackle, I think it's not great in round one. We'll see one or two go early. But then day two is pretty strong. I like some of the defensive tackle depth on day two. But then it drops off once we get to day three. So overall, this is a draft class that is, it's a good year to have early picks. It's not the worst thing that the Bears have. I know there's a big gap in between their picks, but it's not the worst year not to have the fifth rounder, sixth rounder, seventh rounders. We saw so few underclassmen come out this year, and that's a result of NIL, COVID year. This is the last year for that COVID year. Players taking advantage of that, being at the transfer portal, being a big part of it. So the ripple effect has affected this pool of draft prospects. But like I said, I think it depends position by position. Running backs, position it's pretty strong. We're not going to see a Bijan Robinson or Jahmyr Gibbs go early. Probably won't even have a running back top 50 this year, which has happened only once before in NFL draft history. But once we get to round three, those guys are going to fly off the board. So yeah, this is a draft where the pool, it does, once you get to round five, round six, it does fall off, but certain positions might stretch a little bit more. Some might fall apart quicker than teams ideally want, probably in that fourth round range.
All right, my last question for you, Dane, is about kick returners. Mm-hmm. Because the NFL passes this new rule this year, that we're going to see more returns. The way it's set up, a lot of teams are probably going to have two returners back there too. So it seems like the value on this position just went up. And I know for sure that a big reason why they didn't want to table this till Maine, they got it voted on at the owners' meetings, was because they wanted to get it done before the draft, because it would affect the draft. So give us some names of kick returners specifically in this draft that stand out to you.
Yeah, I think probably the top three kick returners. You have Tulu Griffin from Mississippi State, a speedster. That's what he specializes in with those kick returns. And then a pair of running backs. Tyrone Tracy from Purdue. He was a wide receiver at Iowa, transfers to Purdue. They moved to running back for this season. They also gave him kick return duties, and he had a 98-yarder for a touchdown. Really good athlete. He was one of my favorite day three picks, but then he blew up the combine, and I think most people know about Tyrone Tracy now. Just a really good player who, for teams looking for that pass-catching back and return man, he's going to be a perfect fit. Somewhere early day three, we're going to see him come off the board. And then Isaac Grendo from Louisville, former Wisconsin player, running back, banged up, really struggled to stay on the field. But if you're asking him to have a clear role as a kick returner and maybe just a third down back, he is a premier athlete, ran a 4.33 at the combine. He has experience on special teams, both as in coverages and as a return man. I think even though the body of work isn't there, it's not really impressive as a running back. Drafting him as a special teamer and as a part-time back as part of your committee, that's the role for him. And so another guy, fourth round, fifth round, a team's going to roll the dice on him.
Yeah, I saw his RAS score was off the charts. Kind of untapped potential at Wisconsin, but once he got to Louisville, he had a great year there. Dane, thanks so much. We know you got to run. Appreciate your time today, as always, and outstanding work on the Beast.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dane.
All right, there is Dane Brugler.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Johns, I just want to throw in this nugget here as we say goodbye. He had to run, otherwise I was going to throw this at him, because he told us before we started that the Beast was over 300,000 words, which is insane. So I Googled this. I was curious, how many words are in the Bible?
Okay.
So the New American Standard Version has 782,000 words, a little bit more than that, 782,000 words. So the Beast is like halfway to the Bible.
It's like
almost
the Old Testament.
Yeah.
It's his New Testament.
At least more than the New Testament.
The Newer Testament.
It's the New Testament.
The draft.
It's insane.
Testament.
Just think about the Bible. Okay. Well, you know what? This basically is the Bible for the next 2 weeks for me.
Yes. Yeah. Like, it's just an amazing resource to go back to. Like, especially when your team, whatever team it could be, the Bills to the Lions to the Dolphins, draft whomever it is. Like, who is that? Well, let me go back to the Beast, and there's 600 words on this player. Kevin Fishbane always gets a kick out of it. Who was it last year? 2 years ago, the Bears drafted somebody, and no one had a scouting report on him but Dane. Dane was the only one that had a full breakdown on who he was, so we used that as a resource again for our own reporting after the selection. I can't remember who it was. It had to be a late...
From 2 years ago?
From 2 years ago.
Let's see. So it would have been Ryan Poles' first draft.
Ryan Poles' first draft. It might have been.
You're probably right, because they had a ton of picks that year. They drafted like 600 offensive linemen late. Let's see. Was it Elijah Hicks?
I want to say it was Elijah Hicks or like Jatari Carter.
It was probably just Tyree Carter. It was probably just Tyree Carter because we're talking about a seventh rounder out of Southern. Yeah, that had to be it.
Yeah. Just an amazing reference. I the amount of names he can give you at like that. A kick returner, random kick returner question from a special teams coordinator.
Boom.
Here's five names for you.
I may have given him a heads up that I was going to ask.
Cheater.
I think he would have been ready for it anyway. So I'm just looking like at, let's see, what is it, safeties? It's got to be safeties because it's the last one. So it's not just all the write-ups. So he has 38 write-ups for safeties, you know, which is already over a round worth of players right there of safeties. But he has testing information, height, weight, speed, all the testing information for 216 of them. So just in case the Bears, you know, end up with a late seventh rounder or sign as an undrafted free agent, Corey McLellan from CSU Pueblo, we will know that he is a 6'1 and a half, 202 pounds, ran a 4'9 40. You never know when you might need that information. Someone's going to need it.
Yeah. Teams have it. Now, teams don't have like rankings for every single player in the draft. I think some think they do. They don't. Like, they have like a undrafted free agency pool that they attack aggressively at some point. But and again, another resource. Go to the beast when the UDFAs come in.
But in all seriousness, like the undrafted free agents, that thing happens so fast and so crazy that, I mean, you don't have much time to think, so you do need to have them ranked somehow. And you just probably are going straight down your list like, all right, that guy signed with the Steelers. Who's next? All right, let's try to get him. We already missed him. Let's go to the next guy. Because, you know, you're just trying to fill out your roster at that point with bodies. And hope that you have a couple that you obviously make a bigger priority that you might even, hey, let's get into the seventh round here so we can make sure we grab them with a draft pick.
But here's the thing. If the talent pool drops off that much in the sixth and seventh rounds,
yeah,
as Dana said, and even Ryan Poles has indicated, how much money are teams going to be spending in undrafted free agency? I know it's going to happen. Teams talk.
Oh, there's going to be someone.
Yeah. Someone's going to get a good signing bonus.
Well, not only that, there's going to be someone that ends up being a good football player.
Always.
Even in this year, where supposedly there's not a lot of talent after the fourth round. Like, there's going to be a fifth rounder or sixth rounder that ends up being a stud, and then there's going to be plenty of undrafted free agents. There's always a handful every year that become legitimate NFL starters that get good second contracts a few years later. So, in fact, one of those guys, Jack Sanborn, is going into the final year of his rookie deal because those undrafted contracts are only 3 years, not four. Now there's an RFA tender and all that you can do to keep them around, but you know, it's amazing we're already in year three of that situation with Jack Sanborn.
Yeah, he's been a good find. Actually, the Bears, from Ryan Pace to Ryan Poles, have actually been pretty good at finding very good UDFAs. Cam Meredith, Bryce Callahan, I'm forgetting a couple, but there's been players. Christian Jones, NFL players who have had long careers.
Jeez.
He's a starter for the Lions for a little bit.
Yeah, and then he came back to the Bears briefly.
Josh Blackwell.
Yep. Daz Newsome. No, I'm sorry. That was actually a six-round pick that didn't work out. I just looked at his name and said it out loud. Anything else you want to hit on here before we get out?
No. It's like I kind of joked around about, you know, it's just waiting to get to the draft at this point.
Yeah.
The Caleb Williams conversation is only going to intensify post-selection. I know we have a couple more shows before then. We'll get a few more opinions out there. But at this point, the conversation has really just been the number 9 pick and what to do with it. Like, well, one question I did have for him, I know we were tight with time, like, would it be crazy if one of the top three receivers with the Bear and the Bears still traded out of 9, knowing how high he is on some of those on the well, those top three receivers, maybe he would say yes. But
do you know who had that in their what I would call somewhat credible mock draft this morning?
Who?
Peter Schrager.
Peter Schrager. I thought you were going to reference that one.
Yeah, because Peter always waits to do his mock, like, and he'll do a couple, I think, right here in the final week or so.
All and, based off info from teams yeah, and sources.
We know Peter's plugged in, and so he's, I mean, look, even the teams don't know how this thing's going to play out until it actually plays out. There's plenty of draft night surprises, so it's not like, you know, Peter's mock is, you know, should be taken as the gospel here, but plenty of church references on the show all of a sudden. Not sure what's going on today. But, you know, I do take Peter's mock draft as like, okay, we got to pay attention to this one a little bit. He had Malik Nabers still on the board for the Bears at number 9, Johns, and the Bears traded back with the Indianapolis Colts. Colts coming up to 9 to get Malik Nabers. And the Bears going back to 15 where they drafted, something we've talked about a few times in the last couple weeks, an offensive tackle. This time, J.C. Latham, who our guy Josh Lucas really likes. He had him very high in the top 10 episode that we did a couple weeks ago. So,
but exclusively a right tackle in college.
Yeah. That one's interesting because he projects to the left side to me. But that's the thing about, and we don't have to go on all this right now, but I understand this is a, you know, a deep offensive tackle class early. And then as Dane just told us, it drops off a cliff a little bit. But even some of these guys early, I'm not, they still have some questions to me that I'm struggling to get over. That's one of the reasons why I like Troy Fatanu from Washington, because I just feel like he's a very safe player where, to me, he's almost like the Peter Skoronski in this draft where, all right, if it doesn't work out at tackle, you know you got a stud guard at minimum. Like, the floor there is just very, very high. Not quite the same player. And Fatanu's arms are longer than Skoronski's, but it's kind of that comp. Now, we saw the Bears at the end of the day. The length wasn't enough for Skoronski, and then, you know, they went darn all right, and that's fine. But that's kind of where I'm at there, and I was just that was one of the things I found very interesting that Dane had Fatanu so high, number 9.
Yeah, well, we're not offensive line coaches. That projection,
yeah,
when you see him only on tape on the right side, I know it's certain footwork, but like we've covered players. Who was it who struggled at right tackle? Was it Charles Leno Jr.? Just felt better with the footwork at left tackle?
I think so. Yeah, I think
that's a better fit for him just in terms of his own confidence, his own, well, mechanics, the mechanical operation of playing the position.
Yeah, I think you are right on that.
Wasn't yet. Wait, who was the wasn't J Webb Nation?
I think it was Leno.
Was it Leno?
I think it was Leno. It's just like he's just a, you know, for whatever reason, he's just more comfortable at left tackle. And yeah, for J.C. Latham, he started as reserve right guard. Last 2 years went to right tackle, played very well, only allowed 2 sacks, both were last season. But it's just sort of that question with Darnell Wright. Like, if you're going to draft J.C. Latham, can he transition over to left tackle? So we know he can play inside, but what about left tackle? I think that projection will ultimately... But here's the thing, though. I think the Bears think Darnell Wright maybe could play left tackle if they do draft a right tackle. Now, if they go that route, I personally prefer Talese Fuaga from Oregon State. But then we got the arm length issue again there because his arms are a little bit shorter, and we know the Bears like their arm length.
Floose. But these are conversations that have to be had, and you know they are.
Mm-hmm.
With your two top decision makers having the offensive line experience, and again, you're taking a quarterback first overall, so invest in the trenches. But then there's Floose, the defensive guys, like, hey, I need help on the defensive line there. I know this conversation for those who want to take a receiver at number 9, they don't like this part of the conversation, but I think it's really the main conversation happening at Hallis Hall right now. Like, how do we take advantage of this offensive tackle class and still find some type of contributor, day one contributor at defensive end or three technique?
All right. By the way, Fatanu's arms are still 34 and a half.
Yes, they're more than long enough.
It's actually a tick higher than Joe Alt, believe it or not, who's almost 6'9", 6'8", and 5'8". Just an incredible giant human being. If he's somehow available, I just find it hard to believe the Bears would pass on Joe Alt.
Yeah.
If he's somehow still there. All right. So a lot of good stuff here with Dane. We always love talking to him. And we'll be back on Friday. We're getting towards mock draft episode. I don't know if that's going to quite happen Friday. We're still working some things out this week. But we know it's coming. And we'll either knock that out Friday or next Tuesday. We are inching closer and closer to the draft. And again, as I mentioned off the top of the show, those quarter zips are now live. They are ready to order. You know, I don't know why we got in a uniform today. We didn't plan this. But we are representing these polos. I got 9 holes in yesterday, believe it or not.
I got a hole in my shorts. I even know how to happen. And I like, they're like my, one of my favorite pair of shorts.
Yeah.
And I ran into the couch and there wasn't a nail sticking out of the couch. Just happened. Ripped just ripped it.
Yeah.
Just ripped it.
Don't use those shorts playing golf then.
No. Well, they're done now. They're
just out.
They're okay. In the garbage.
All right. Well, I don't. To my knowledge, we aren't selling any shorts, but
not yet.
Not yet. Maybe eventually. But we do have these awesome golf polos and now quarter zips, which were suggested by a listener. And our guys over at Obvious Shirts, Joe and Devin, were like, oh, yeah, we can get that done. Boom. HoganJohns.com. Go find them. They are live now. They look awesome. Especially like the one that has it actually says Hogan Johns. So you got two different logo options. We're like an NFL team now. You got primary logo, secondary logo. It's big time.
You should let us run your draft. No.
You know, reading Alec Lewis's story in The Athletic this morning, I would be curious. If you gave Hogan Johns 10 years of running the draft, would it be any worse than what NFL teams do? And like, I know that I'm mostly kidding when I say that, but also like you read stories like that and you're like, none of this matters.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw darts at a dartboard and you might have the same probability.
Yeah. I would not select a tight end from Ashland.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't have either, but to the point, to our point, we probably wouldn't have known. I mean, I don't think we would have gotten to the tight end from Ashland in our scouting. And
that might be okay.
I think it would have been. I think it would have been just fine. It was a great story. Athletic.com/HoganJohns. Basically going through some of the history of analytics in the draft and teams basically not following what they seemingly know they should do. And it was also, quite frankly, a little depressing reading it with the amount of work I put into the draft every year, just being like, yeah, none of this matters.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Still crapshoot.
Fantastic. And with that said, I'm going to end this show because I got to spend about 3 hours right now working on finishing up the Bears 100, which does matter, damn it. So check it out. If you're a CHGO diehard, please, a lot of work going into that. Like the Beast, it's just fun to follow along. Once the picks are made, having the information there in front of you for who the Bears picked, as a resource and going forward. I've been checking last year's Bears 100 a lot just to see how things ended up playing out, what mistakes were made, what we got right, what we got wrong. It's all fun. And that's what this is. It's sports. It's fun. That's what the show's all about. We appreciate everybody watching, listening. Please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button if you're watching on YouTube. And as I've been telling you, even if you don't watch on YouTube, please jump on there and hit the subscribe button for us because it helps grow the channel. Vice versa, if you watch on YouTube, please check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those things, and hit subscribe there. Please rate and review the pod. Helps us grow. We greatly appreciate all the support. Merch is up, including the quarter zips now. HoganJohns.com. We'll be back later in the week. We'll talk to you then.
Don't forget to wish Adam Hogue happy birthday on X.
Yeah. Hello.
My name is Bobby Boucher.